Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Q1 FY22 earnings conference call of CDSL India, hosted by Axis Capital Limited. Please note that CDSL does not provide specific revenue or earnings guidance. Anything said on this call which reflects CDSL's outlook for the future or which could be construed as forward-looking statement must be reviewed in conjunction with the risk that the company faces. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Aditya Bagul. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Steven. Good morning, everyone. On behalf of Axis Capital, a very warm welcome to Q1 FY22 conference call of CDSL India Limited. Before we begin, let me just take this opportunity to congratulate Snehal sir and the entire team at CDSL for a superb Q1 performance. We have the management team of CDSL represented by Mr. Nehal Vora, Managing Director and CEO, Mr. Girish Amesara, Chief Financial Officer, Ms. Nayana Ovalekar, COO, Mr. Ramkumar K, Chief of Business Operations, Sunil Alvares, Chief Operating Officer, CDSL Ventures Limited, Mr. Swaroop Kumar Gothi, Vice President, and Mr. Nilesh, Assistant Vice President. Without further ado, I'll hand over the call to the management for their opening remarks, post which we'll open the floor for Q&A. Thank you, and Nehal sir, over to you, sir.
Thank you so much, Aditya, for the kind introduction and wishes. I welcome you all to the CDSL's quarterly conference call for the quarter ended June 30th, 2021. I hope each of you and your loved ones are safe and healthy. I'm joined on this call by other members of our management team who will address your questions later. The years 2020 and 2021 have been unprecedented due to the pandemic, and it has also brought to the fore various kinds of difficulties, challenges in our day-to-day lives. It has spurred a lot of new participation also. As kind of an opportunity, new participants have joined the securities market, and that has seen a robust growth, which has been seen by around 7 crore unique client codes at the exchanges. In the Demat accounts, around 1.9 crore Demat accounts from April 2020 to June 2021. It is important to even note that a significant part has come not only from metros but from Tier 2 and Tier 3 cities, which is a positive sign for the growth of the Indian, which is a positive sign for the growth of India as a whole. Also, the Demat accounts from non-metros reflect the deeper penetrations of our securities market. In the previous year, we had fine-tuned our business strategy with a vision and launched initiatives that promote various measures which will look at empowering the self-sufficiency of every person, of every participant, or basically the Atmanirbhar Niveshak, to ensure that we are well prepared for the new normal and are among the companies to capitalize on the new opportunities which is basically emerging out of this entire transformation. This is obviously focused on the core values of transparency and good security. We hope that with the changing times, individuals and companies continue to start really availing the solutions and online services and grow to be a self-sufficient and an Atmanirbhar Niveshak. We will continue to innovate and offer e-services and digital solutions to all our capital market participants. Speaking on the business updates, the total number of active beneficial owners as on Q1 of FY21/22 is about 3.97 crores, so close to 4 crore Demat accounts. The value of securities is about 31.9 lakh crores, about at that level. We continue to provide services in line with transformation and requirement of the current times to promote various kinds of physic initiatives, which moves from a physical mode to a digital mode. It is also in, we also have the e-voting services, which is basically a hassle-free event for shareholders to continue their voting, and also services to hold the annual general meeting through the video conference. We also provide an email services to companies to update the shareholder database to ensure that the communication to shareholders is valid, sufficient, and productive. Before I hand over to our Chief Financial Officer, I want to take a brief moment to place our complete appreciation and gratitude to all our stakeholders, beneficial owners, depository participants, issuers, regulators, employees, and other market participants for their constant faith in us. Now I request our CFO, Girish, to take you through the financial performance. So really over to you, Girish.
Thank you, Nehal. Speaking on our financials, we have seen a healthy growth in this quarter with an year-on-year increase of 98% in our standalone net profits. Our total income on a consolidated basis for the quarter ended June 30, 2021 has increased by 43.78 crores, which is 51%, resulting into total income of 129.79 crores. Compared to 86.01 crore for the quarter ended June 30, 2020. The net profit after tax on a consolidated basis for the quarter ended June 30, 2021 has increased by rupees 17.27 crore, which is 37%, resulting into a net profit of 64 crore compared to 46.73 crore for the quarter ended June 30, 2020. Now, on a standalone basis, the total income for the quarter ended June 30th, 2021 has increased by 54.73 crore, which is 82%, resulting into a total income of 121.69 crore compared to 66.96 crore for the quarter ended June 30, 2020. The net profit on a standalone basis for the quarter ended June 30, 2021 has increased by 36.12 crore, which is 98%, resulting into net profit of rupees 73.17 crore from rupees 37.01 crore compared in the quarter ended June 30, 2020. Now I will request Sri Sunil Alvarez, the MD and CEO of CDSL Venture, to give update on operations of our wholly owned subsidiary, that is CDSL Ventures Limited. Over to you, Sunil. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Girish. Good morning, everyone. The first quarter of FY22 was a very good period for the securities market and therefore for CVL as well. So far as CVL was concerned, the operational income in for the quarter ended June FY22 was at 28.11 crores as against 12.92 crores for the quarter ended FY21, which was an increase of 15.19 crores or a growth of 118%. There was a marginal dip in the other income from 4.14 crore in the quarter ended FY21 to 2.74 crores in the quarter ended FY22. As a result, the total income, there was a growth of 13.78 crores. That is, in quarter ended June FY22, we had a total income of 30.686 crores and as against 17.07 crores in the quarter ended FY21. As a result of all this, the net profit for CDSL, there has been a growth of 69%. In the quarter ended June FY22, the total profit after tax was 14.37 crores as against 8.50 crores in the quarter ended June FY21. So far as the KRA business is concerned, we have seen a phenomenal growth in the last quarter where the number of KYC records created in quarter ended June FY 2022 has increased by 195% as against the number of records created in quarter ended June FY 2021. Similarly, we've seen a good growth in number of KYC records fetched by intermediaries from CVL by about 168%. So far as the other businesses are concerned, we are on the, you know, we'll be starting off shortly with our e-sign and e-KYC businesses as well as our online account opening project. With these few words, I'd like to thank for inviting us and, if there are any questions, we'd be very happy to take them.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. As soon as someone presses star and one to ask a question, the lead operator will enter the conference and announce the participants. The first question is from the line of Kunal Thanvi from Banyan Tree Advisors. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, good morning, and thanks for the opportunity. I hope that Team CDSL is doing well. I had few set of questions. One was on the annual issuer charges. If you look at this quarter numbers, there has been a, you know, jump. Like, is it due to the increase in number of home loans with CDSL? That is question number one. Second question was, you know, what on the other expenses? Like, it has been for a while, you know, we've not been able to understand how to look at the other expenses over a longer period of time because the initial thought process was that a large part of these expenses would be fixed and there would be an operating leverage that would kick in. Just, you know, wanted to understand the sharp increase in other expenses in last two quarters. Third was on, you know, demat of mutual funds. Like, you know, in last two to three quarters, we have seen a lot of, you know, noise around the digital players, you know, gaining market share in terms of, you know, mutual fund distribution, which in a way turns out to be, you know, they hold these mutual fund in the demat account. Also on 26th of July, SEBI has, you know, come out with a circular wherein it has asked depositories, KRA, RTAs and mutual funds to, you know, form a common platform for, you know, for the digital distribution of mutual funds. How does, you know, a player like CDSL and NSDL, the depositories fit into that index? Overall, this is how, you know, how we are placed in terms of dematerialization of mutual funds. Thanks.
Well, I'll just answer. I'll ask the CFO, Girish, to answer the first two questions on the increase in the basically issuer charges and the expenses. The overall underlying theme is that the billing is done for kind of the entire year for the issuer, so that could be one reason. I'll hand it over to Girish. Before that, on the mutual fund, on your third question, I think the general process which is moving is trying to graduate the entire securities market structure from a physical mode to basically an electronic mode. Demat becomes the most important building block to kind of ensure this. Mutual funds is something which is optional. A lot of the investors see the benefit in having a demat account where the mutual funds can be put in. It is not really being mandatory as of now. In terms of the circular which SEBI has issued of a new platform, this is to ensure that there is a deeper penetration and there is a kind of a common platform. The circular has been issued. We'll see how it basically pans out. I think the most important process is that the demat accounts becomes the most important building block for in any such kind of the basically the initiatives of moving from a physical mode to basically an electronic mode. And that is what is the core within this. And that could be considered as really an opportunity for both PNSDL and CDSL. So with this, I'll just hand over to our CFO, Girish, to answer the first two questions.
So to answer your question on annual issue charges, as Nehal rightly explained, we are raising invoices in the first quarter, and appropriately it is distributed over 12 months for the accounting purpose. This charge is these invoices are levied based on the capital that is admitted with depository as on 31st of March, and this has increased largely on account of increase in folios. And on expenditure front, due to increase in operating profits, there is a charge which is regulatory charge, which is contribution to investor protection fund, that has increased roughly 1.5 crore is the incremental expenditure that we had to consider this year. And on a consolidated basis, if you see, our operational income has also increased, resulting into increase in expenditure like KRA charges that we have to pay to the other KRA agencies. That has increased by around 3.88 crores. Technological expense has marginally increased. Another contributor in expenditure is the statement that we issued, cash statement that we issue to all the investors. That has increased due to increase in number of participants. It has also increased by 1.5 crore during this quarter-to-quarter, June quarter compared to June quarter last year. These are the, and one of the, another important increase in expenditure is the SMS alert that we have to send to the investors due to implementation of margin pledge system and EDIS, where we have to issue, we have to send SMS alerts to all the investors. That has again contributed increase of around 1.5 crore. So all put together, all these expenditure are more or less directly linked with operating profits and the various regulatory measures that we implemented during this financial year. So I hope I've answered your question.
Sure. Just on the expenses part, like when you said, you know, the investor protection, it would be for this quarter only, right? Going ahead, it will normalize again, right? Is that understanding right?
No, it's basically a function of what is the revenue. It's a percentage of the revenue. As the revenue goes up, you have to keep on increasing or decreasing.
So if our revenue operating income is in similar lines, then this cost would be future cost would be in these similar lines, as Nehal has rightly put across.
Sure. I'll get back in the queue. Thanks. All the best.
Thank you. A reminder to the participants, anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one at this time. The next question is from the line of Prakash Kapadia from Anivet Portfolio Managers. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Thanks for taking my question. Congrats on crossing the milestone of 4 crore demat accounts. A couple of questions from my end. On the CVL business, with increase in volumes, are we seeing any pricing changes for refresh or for new customers? Generally, with volume increase, we see some pricing changes. So have we seen a major pricing change on the mutual fund side on the CVL business?
I'll ask Sunil to answer that.
Yeah.
See, so far as the pricing is concerned, we have only two heads of pricing. One is on the creation and second is on the fetch. Okay. So typically, we do not, you know, we have a standard rate for creation as well as for fetch. But on the creation side, yes, if there is a large volume, we do give certain discounts to the participants.
Okay. And, you know, from media reports, we understand CAMS has recently launched this eKYC using Aadhaar for mutual fund investors. Does this lead to more competition? Does it expand the market? Because, you know, being an RTA, they can cross-sell better. Do we see some change in the pricing or the way we are operating that business, or really doesn't affect us?
See, there are two ways of looking at it, okay? One is that we have added almost 10 lakh plus KYC records in the last quarter, okay, as compared maybe to the other KRAs. I think we have rehired of them. You'll have to actually compare the number of KYC records which have been added with us as compared to how many folios have been added in the mutual fund. But there again, you have to keep in mind that a large number of folios have been added because of the accounts which have got added through CDSL, and people have taken credit in the demat form, as well as the KYC has been done through CV. So that will really not give you an accurate picture. And secondly, I would not be able to comment on it because those figures are not available in the public domain.
Okay.
I hope that answers your question.
Right. And any clarity on the SEBI project for FY22?
Oh, yeah. We are planning to have the second phase, so but the way it is proceeding, it'll take some time because during the lockdown, courts are closed, etc., because a lot of things, because it's a Supreme Court-appointed committee, so a lot of approvals have to be taken from that committee, etc. So it's taking time.
Right. So maybe second half, there could be some revenue coming.
That's right.
And lastly, from my side, on the private companies now with unlock happening and mobility increasing, do we see a good increase in the number of private companies? What was it as of now, and any sense on revenues on the private company in terms of contribution?
So I think the law currently states that if you want to transfer or raise any capital, then you need to demat it. I think with the pandemic there, the policymakers will obviously use a little bit of time to make it mandatory. But I think the overall underlying ethos is moving to basically a demat mode because there are a huge amount of kind of advantages. Only thing, when it will be done, that has to be seen.
Fine. And any kind of overall number from a private company revenue perspective for, say, last year and this quarter, if you can just share?
I'll just this here for Girish.
So the income, the overall total income in the quarter from unlisted company is around 86 lakhs compared to in last June, we had around 40 lakhs.
Okay. Okay. Fine. I'll join back the queue. Thank you. All the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Alok Shah from Monarch Networth. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Thank you for the opportunity and congrats on the great set of numbers, sir. I had two questions. I'll just take that second one as an extension to the previous one. Girish, sir, you mentioned the revenue from private companies was 86 lakhs. How was this number for full year last year?
Can you answer that?
Yes, just a moment. Just I'll give that figure. Last year, full year, it was around 3 crore or 3.5 crore.
Sure. This helps. Second question, sir, is more on trying to understand what would be a more comfortable margin level or for the increase in cost that we have seen in this quarter because of increase in volume. The margins still continue to hold on well. In fact, it keeps on increasing with every passing quarter. And I believe there will be a point where you would not really be able to take the margin beyond a particular element. So internally, what is your assessment on a steady state margin that we could see on consolidated basis?
So I think futuristic, it will be difficult to predict. But it's a market infrastructure company. So you'll have to kind of invest into technology and systems, which is kind of a fixed cost, and the security of the information. And finally, basically the human resource. So I think these are some of the important things which we will have to continue to invest. And also newer business opportunities are coming up. We've set up our subsidiary at the IFSC at Gujarat. And there is an international bullion exchange coming up also there, which will trade the spot gold and other precious metals. So that is another kind of opportunity for the depository business. So as the ecosystem increases in terms of breadth as well as the expense, you'll find newer kind of opportunities, and that will have to be kind of invested in the relevant systems and basically the human resource. So it'll be difficult to give a number to it, but I think that is what how we are really structured.
Sure. This has. I have two more questions. Can I just continue with them? Is there been any element of interactions with the regulator on the annual issuer charges now?
We will be kind of assessing it, because with 2 years of the pandemic, most of the costs have come down. There is a general perception that charges should come down. So as of now, we are really waiting and really assessing what would be the right kind of opportunity to do that.
Sure. So
a proposal by both the NSDL and CDA. Right.
So if I understood right, on the annual issue charges that we are recovering, you know, that we are taking up into our P&L, there is an element of revisiting those numbers on the lower side. Is that what I got it?
No. I'm not saying lower side or upper side. That will have to be seen, because it's approved by us. Till now, the trend was it was increasing every 5 years. It's been more than, it's probably the sixth year now. But because of 2 years of the pandemic, we haven't gone back to the regulator.
Sure. Okay. And if I could squeeze in the last question, sir, what is the element of opportunity? I mean, you've given some numbers there, but how quickly you could see something like our insurance repository business really gaining bigger scale? And for that matter, the warehouse and receipt opportunity.
Yeah, so both these businesses, I think there is a fair amount of policy changes which are on the anvil are being implemented. Overall, the ethos of the government is to move from a physical mode to an electronic mode or a digital mode. And there is going to be an opportunity as and when that kind of really opens up. Because both on the insurance and the warehousing, there is huge amount of maybe potential which can take it forward. So you have to really wait and watch how this will.
Sure, this helps. Thank you so much, sir.
You're welcome.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sanket Goda from Spark Capital. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity. Sir, I just need a couple of breakup in the transaction income. Last time you mentioned that the pledge income was around 2.75 crores in the fourth quarter. So in 44.3 crores, just wanted to understand that number has seen an increase or what is the trend, what you're seeing. If you can quantify that number, it would be great. And second question is based on the e-voting income, how it has been in the current quarter compared to last year. And finally, just wanted to understand why the data provisioning cost has gone up and how do you see this to behave going ahead in that sense, given it has been now around 2.7 crores for console numbers, how do you see this number to play out?
I ask CFO Girish to answer that.
So answering your question first on margin pledge income, the margin pledge income that we achieved in this quarter is roughly around 3.25 crore compared to March quarter of 2.75 crore. Last quarter, June is not comparable because this activity started in somewhere in August 2020.
Right.
And on your question on your the second question was on what?
E-voting income, sir.
So the e-voting income has marginally increased by roughly around 30 lakhs compared to June quarter. Actual e-voting income will start in next quarter, which is September.
So I believe, okay. So it was 1.7 million in first quarter, if I'm not wrong, last year. So you are saying that has increased by 30 lakhs rupees, right?
Yes.
Okay, sir. And on data provisioning, this just given that number has decently increased. If I look it from year on year perspective, is it in line with the top line growth, or there is something else we need to read into it, sir?
What do you mean by data provisioning?
Data provisioning last year it was 1.4 crores. It has increased to 2.7.
Debtors. You are talking about debtors provision. So debtors provision is based on the historical collection ratio that we have, and it's a function of requirement of Indian accounting standard, which specifies that you have to make provision based on expected credit loss method. So the model has been built in along with the as agreed with the statutory auditors, and this quarter it has taken a charge of around 2.66 crore compared to 1.40 crore last quarter. So you can assume that this more or less the charge would be around in range of this.
Okay, got it, sir. And finally, on just the way you gave the breakup in the presentation, the admin and other expense. So if I look it on year-on-year basis, means regulatory cost you have segregated, but if I look at that cost year-on-year basis, that has increased substantially from 8 crores to 18 crores. Even from sequential basis point, it seems to be a decent jump, around 4-5%. So you try to explain that question initially, but given I believe IPF cost is part of your of the regulatory cost, this 18 crores, what is exactly leading it to it? Basically, is
so on a consolidated basis, the regulatory cost consists of contribution to IPF, which is SEBI mandated contribution, which is 5% of our operating profits. And apart from this, there are regulatory costs in terms of collection that we receive, which is on issuer income. And apart from this, in CCRL, there is a regulatory cost which is payable to WDRA. So major out of this, major component is contribution to IPF.
Oh, okay, sir. But I was just referring to the admin and other expense, which is 18 crores.
So this regulatory expense is a function of the market. If our operating profits are on higher side, this cost is going to increase, because it is directly proportionate to our operating profits.
Right, sir. Okay.
I hope I have answered your question.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Kunal Tanvi from Banyan Tree Advisors. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for the follow-up. Just wanted to, have more clarity on the annual issuer side of the business. So when we, say that, one of the reasons for the increase is the increase in the folios. So how does it generally function, right? If the number of folios in the market, improves, will the annual issuer charges for depositories would improve? If yes, then does it mean that this part of the business will also have some, sense of cyclicality? Because, in a market like this, new number of investors come in, and, that may, lead to an increase in the, annual issuer charge.
So I think it is in terms of how the number of investors based on folios, but there is a ceiling of the charges which are charged to each company. So even though if the participation increases and the shareholding folios increase, it will go, but it will kind of hit the ceiling in terms of the charges.
Okay, so for example, hypothetically, if a company has got 100 folios today, and if it goes to 120 folios tomorrow, like the next year, does it result into, you know, higher annual issuer charges for that particular company across depositories?
To answer your question, see, the annual issuer charge income is based on share capital. Okay, there is a slab wise share capital charge which is minimum starting from 9,000 rupees up to 75,000 rupees, and also there is a charge based which is based on folios. So this income particularly is a combination of both this particular requirement. And to be very frank, we are not disclosing the details of what is the income of slab-based income and what is the income of folio basis, because these details are not publicly available.
No, I get it. The way we had the understanding was that, you know, either we charge on the per folio basis or on the capital basis, whichever is higher. So hence, if you know, if number of folios increases and if that amount increase is larger than the say paid up capital wala formula, then
perfect.
Makes sense. Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Gokul Maheshwari from Auriga Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, just slightly more basic understanding of the previous question only. So when you mention on the annual issuer charges, does it increase? It is based on share capital and the number of folios, whichever is higher. But is there an upper limit to this that it stops at a particular level?
Yeah, that's what I said. There's a ceiling to it beyond which it is, then it gets frozen at the ceiling.
Okay, great. And just the second question is that on the breakup of the income, when we reported transaction revenues of transaction charges of 44 crores, where would IPO and corporate action be reported and what would be that number?
So IPO and corporate action income is 7.75 crore in this particular quarter, which is 7% of our total operating income.
And when you, in your presentation, when you put this out, where do you account that in the subhead? Like whether it's in transaction charges or is it part of annual issue charges or other income? Then?
In the presentation, if you see, we have given a breakup which has the larger amount appearing separately and all amounts which are less than a particular percentage are clubbed as an other income. So mostly of the time all market driven income are clubbed together. For example, transaction charge and IPO corporate action are based on market, how it works. So most of the time we club these two number and we try to put it across. But if the percentage of corporate IPO corporate action is much smaller, then we include in other.
Okay, so if I may ask, if 44.34 crores includes IPO corporate action, includes pledge income, this thing also, more market related?
44.34 crore is only transaction charge, which includes transaction charge plus margin pledge charges, and it does not include the IPO corporate action.
So that would be in the other operational?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you so much and all the best. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Devansh Nigotia from SRMPL. Also requesting all the participants to please limit your questions to two per participant. Should you have any follow-up question, may be requested to rejoin the queue. Mr. Nigotia, please proceed with your question.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. Sir, it might sound a bit repetitive, but I just wanted to re-clarify it once again. In case of mutual funds which are purchased through fintech brokers and mutual funds which are basically dematerialized in the custody value, so even mutual funds pay annual issuer charges to us. Is that understanding correct or?
Go ahead.
Yeah.
So in terms of the mutual fund, the annual issuer charges is basically whatever the units are. I'll ask PFO Girish to answer that.
So in case of mutual funds, it is part of annual issuer charges.
Okay. And what would be the mix between mutual fund and companies in terms of annual issuer charges?
So the annual issuer charges is largely driven by companies, and mutual fund is very minuscule amount.
Okay. And in case of the transaction charges, I just wanted to understand, for equity, the things are very clear that we earn 5 rupee per debit transaction. But let's say now these other securities which are getting sold through fintech brokers like digital gold and mutual funds. So in that case also, there is similar way of charging, or how does that work?
I'm sorry, can you come back?
Yeah, so now through these fintech broker, we can buy mutual funds, we buy digital gold. So even they get into the dematerialized account, and then whenever the debit transaction occur, we earn the standard 5 rupee per debit transaction?
Yes. Whatever is the ISIN and part of the security in a demat account, it's a standard charge, which is...
Okay, so in case of, I just wanted to understand, what are the things which directly come into the DMAT?
Gold is yet not moved to the DMAT mode. There is a plans of moving it. Okay. As of now, there is no gold as a part of this.
So as of now, it will be equity, and within mutual funds, it will be debt funds and mutual funds, equity mutual fund. Or are there any other securities on which we can earn the debit transaction?
There are debentures, bonds, TPs and CDs and... all those also are there, and there are also basically REITs, InvITs, etc. But these are all at kind of the inception stage, yet it has to pick up. It is not really mandatory as of
now. Okay, correct. And sir, in case of, I just wanted to understand the unit economics. I mean, you just mentioned that there is a ceiling limit, but when we look at the charges, it is 11 rupee per folio or based on share capital, whichever is higher. It is not whichever is lower. So why did we say that there is a ceiling limit to that income that we can earn from, let's say, one mutual fund? Or I just
to understand. So if you look at the circular issued by SEBI and by us, there is a comparison to be made between the number of folio and the share capital. So if the number of folios are lesser, then the slab based transaction kicks in. Okay. Now in slab-based transaction, there is a limit of maximum 75,000 rupees.
Correct. But when the folio number, it exceeds the share capital
then the charges will be based on the folio, na?
Yes, exactly. Yes, that because you mentioned that there is a ceiling limit, but then, okay.
No, so the ceiling limit is ceiling.
When the ceiling is reached, the higher of the two is taken.
Precisely.
And once your ceiling is reached, then it's a ceiling.
And in the presentation, we highlighted new revenue streams in CVL. So can you just elaborate on it? Are there any new opportunities which we are seeing, or?
So,
we recently received the Aadhaar-based eKYC approval. We have also recently received approval from CCA to register as a CA for Aadhaar-based eSign. And we launched our own online account opening software, which we are quite confident that many of the mid and small size DPs would find it useful to, you know, use this as a backbone to launch their online digital services. So I think going forward in the next couple of quarters, we are looking at some traction on these three services.
And what would be the unit economics? In the way we collect charges, unit economics in the way we collect charges for all these three new opportunities?
I didn't get your question, sorry.
I mean, how will the charges, you know, get collected in these three cases, Aadhaar-based ECA and the other two opportunities that we just...
Aadhaar-based and eSign will be transaction-based, and online account opening software which we will be providing again, that would be transaction based, but it has a lot of options available, whether you want to go online, Aadhaar, offline, Aadhaar. So based on how you actually want to do it, you know, the charges would kick in.
Okay. And so in case
Mr. Nigotia, sorry to interrupt, sir, but for any follow-up questions, may be requested to rejoin the queue, please. The next question is from the line of Kabir Sehgal from Bikalin Fabric Private Limited. Please go ahead. Mr. Kabir Sehgal, your line is in talk mode. Kindly go ahead with your question, please. As there is no response from the current participant, we move to the next question from the line of Pratik from Civica. Please go ahead.
Hello? Am I audible?
Yes, sir, you are.
So I would like to first congratulate Nehal sir and for entire studio session for fantastic
number. Sir, may we request you to take the phone off speaker, please?
Okay. Am I audible now?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, okay. So I would like to first congratulate Nehal sir and the entire CDSA team for the stellar number. My question is just a follow-up question to the one. So just want to understand on the issue charges. As Nehal sir mentioned that it is all depend on the market regulator. But I just want to know about that. What CDSA and the CDSA team think that is there any chance in the future that this annual issue charges may go up or it's in the lower side? Because it is all proportional to the main income of the CDSA. So I just want to know that updates.
It will be difficult to predict that, and it's a futuristic statement. We don't give futuristic replies. So we'll have to basically wait and watch what happens.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Paresh from Club Millionaire. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Nehal. Congratulations to you and your entire team for a wonderful performance. I just wish and pray all of you are safe and healthy given the second wave. My questions are a couple of requests rather to start off with, right? We wanted some data on terms of in the presentation with regard to how we are planning to capture existing product categories, whether it's bonds, you know, commercial deposits or debentures or rates or in the presentation and mutual funds as well. So we just get an idea because, you know, the capital market activities are closer to the peak, right? So just kind of data on the presentation would be pretty helpful. The second one is also on the GIFT City. Yeah, go ahead, sorry.
On that, you know, it's kind of, see, we are in a regulatory-driven business. So the rules of the game would be driven by the regulator. Difficult to predict that how it will pan out because there are various kinds of things which are put into place when it's finalized, any proposal is finalized. They normally put out the paper for maybe the public comment, etc.
So Nehal, I was looking, you know, in terms of past data, for example, the quarter just gone by, right? If we could have some percentage or some numbers on how many MF, for example, within the trading income itself, how many mutual funds units were effectively traded or bonds for that matter or REITs or in that matter. The numbers may be small at the moment, but it's just to kind of get a flare in terms of how the business is structurally moving, right? And how are we capturing basically adjusting product categories? Just some past data, nothing on futuristic basis.
Yeah, but see again, Martin, we can give you, but the point is that that will not give the basically the extrapolation if you are thinking of doing that out of that as to what will be the futuristic kind of agenda. So I think in terms of that, I think we need to basically keep these things in mind. In terms of your first question as to how things will be moving forward in terms of basically the REITs in which are some areas where the benefits of the DMAT etc. would be kind of seen by the market. The benefits of basically margin pledge also can be done through the DMAT system, and so these are some of the core benefits of moving to a DMAT account, which will ensure that more and more products will move towards that.
Sure. Yes, Nihal. I'm just hoping if you can put that data out without the idea of extrapolation, just to see, are we hitting, what is the percentage, for example, of the universe of mutual fund units, DMAT units, could be potentially 100. Are we at 1%, 2%, or even say 5%, right? Just to kind of know where we are. We're not worried about, how it grows going forward, or the pace at which it grows. We know it's going to grow, but, just a number on that would be helpful, right? The second thing is, Nihal, you are always very optimistic about the GIFT City transaction with the business that we have incorporated recently. So maybe a line or a session on that in our presentation of how it's moving. I know it's at the infancy. Maybe some number or some details just to see how the business is panning out as well. Right? So that would be
so
the second part.
From the subsidiary, it's kind of early stages. As we gain some meaningful traction, we definitely put that as a part of our presentation.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Amit Chandra from HDFC Securities. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Yes, sir, thanks for the opportunity.
Mr. Chandra, can you speak closer to the answer, please? Your voice is not audible.
Hello.
Yeah, is it clear now? Yeah. Yes, sir. Thanks for the opportunity. So my question is related to the account additions that we are seeing. So it's pretty healthy. But are we seeing any increase in competition, from the competitor that we have, or any change in strategy that we want to do it to report at our incremental market share, or we are happy with what we are doing? And also in terms of the technology expenses, we have seen increased technology expenses over the course of FY21 also, but from here on, like most of the expenses have been done, or we are still planning to increase investments in technology because that has become the backbone for every business. So, some more clarity on that. Thank you, sir.
No, so the first question is, obviously we are completely vigilant. We will ensure that we remain basically a value proposition to the market, and we will see how that goes forward. This is basically a dynamic market, so we have to keep on ensuring that we come up with newer kind of value propositions to ensure that we remain very relevant to the market. Second question I'll ask the CFO Girish to answer.
Amit, can you repeat your question, please? I'm sorry, I could not hear it properly.
Yes. So, on the technology expenses, we have seen increased investment in FY21 on the technology part. So, most of the major investments have been done, or we're still planning to have some big investments here.
This is more to do with the ongoing technology advancements to ensure there's a value proposition. It's a continuous process. We have also put in a robust cybersecurity framework to ensure, but this is something which cannot, which needs to continuously evolve in terms of how it will kind of take it forward.
No, sir, I was just trying to understand if we have any like major upgrades that we want to do, or the technology practice that we have as of now is like sufficient to handle the traffic, like 2x from here or 3x from here, just from that perspective.
So I think Amit, there's a constant, basically the benchmarking is being done. The infrastructure is sufficient to ensure the load. And we have to continuously plan for the future as the growth is expected. So there is no definitive answer to this, because it's a continuously moving thing within our system.
Okay. Answer last question to Girish, sir. So in the other income, in the investment income, do you have any one-off in this quarter, or it's all MTM gains, and how do you see that for the full year?
On a consolidated basis, there are no one-ons. In standalone, there is a one-on which is the dividend that we have received from a subsidiary. So that is a one-on in standalone.
Okay. Okay, thank you, sir, and all the best for the future.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Ravi Arun, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. Sir, this question is on the cost of holding mutual funds in demat mode for investors. When an investor holds mutual fund in physical mode, practically there is no cost of holding it or when they do transactions compared to holding them in a demat form. This is because while holding the MF in demat form, they need to pay some charges to the DP, and also when they transact, they need to pay to CDSL or NSDL. Is my understanding correct, sir?
Yes, it is like any security, like a share, that is generally when you open and there is a transfer, there is basically a debit is being charged. The credit is free.
Okay, sir. So if that is the case, then you know it will be very difficult to get the investors to move on to the demat mode, because for him the cost is increasing. Even though it offers several advantages in terms of, you know, they can take loan and things like that. So how does, I don't know, how would the investor look at it? My sense is that many may not move to a DMAT, which may not be good for CDSL.
No, I think there is a value proposition, because the moment you have the margin pledge facilities, you can leverage your mutual fund units to pose as margins for your other transactions. So there's a safekeeping, custody is there, and also the whole in risk of maybe losing your folio papers in case they're physical mode, all that is kind of a great advantage.
Sir, if you're holding it, say, through, because I invest through mutual fund utilities, so it is almost in a digital mode kind of a thing only. So there, my cost of operations is almost nil. But the asset management companies may be paying money to Carvi or CAMS, you know, whenever the transaction is done by the investors,
right,
in a physical mode. So the, can't the CDSL negotiate with the companies that when they can take care of the expenditure for the transactions, why can't they do this in a similar manner for CDSL?
No, these are rules which kind of which are basically going forward, which basically the regulator will kind of determine. And as it was said earlier, there's a common platform coming up. So a lot of things are in the process of change in the mutual fund space also. So we'll see, we'll wait and watch how this goes forward.
Okay. Sir, I'll just one more small question. Sir, on the transaction income from CCRL, is it based on the barrels receipt? Is it on the number or the quantity of the commodity for which the barrels receipt is issued? Does income depend on quantity?
Yeah, I think it's a function of that. I don't know if the number is there, but otherwise it is a function of both. I don't know really exactly. I need to probably check.
Sir, would you like me to answer the question, sir? Ram Kumar,
yeah. Yeah, yeah, Ram.
Sir, it's based on that quantity covered by the ENWR.
Okay.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Devansh Nigotia from SRMPL. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hello. Yeah, sir. Thanks for the opportunity once again. Sir, just wanted to understand for CDS and IFSC, we have done some investments there. So if you can elaborate on the size of the opportunity and currently at what stage it is there. So.
Yeah, so we are the only depository there. We are a foreign depository. It's created as a subsidiary. And as this unit is expected to grow, the entire kind of, yeah, basically the IFSC space, where the all the regulators are rolled into one, all the regulators. So I think there will be, it will be difficult to kind of put a number to it, but I think this is a new kind of area which we are trying to
Okay, as of now, we are the only one.
Okay. Hello.
Yeah.
Yeah. And sir, just one more question. In case of, can you elaborate on the eligibility on what kind of securities that, you know, we purchase through these brokers and which automatically gets in the DMAT? So I think for digital gold, you said that they don't get directly in the DMAT form as of now. So what are other possible securities which automatically get in the DMAT?
So now REITs, in which these are all not compulsory, they can be on optional basis like the mutual fund. Then there are basically bonds which can come in.
Okay.
The sovereign gold bonds, for example, another space. So I think slowly the asset class is slowly growing as we see the benefits of it.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Aditya Bakul for closing comments. Over to you.
Thank you, Stephen. Big thank you to the management for answering the questions. I'll hand the floor back to Nehal, sir. Sir, if you have any closing remarks.
No, just stay safe and secure and really wishing everybody all the best.
Thank you, sir, and wish you all the best. Stephen, we can close the call.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Axis Capital, that concludes this conference. Thank you all for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.
Thank you.
Thank you.